the Weizmann Center researchers at UW-Madison have a lot of irons in the fire. They're doing both biological and behavioral research on developmental disabilities like autism, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, and communication disorders, and neurodegenerative diseases. Think ALS, Parkinson's. We're going to touch on many of these areas this hour. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. But before we get started, let's get up to speed with our spring membership drive. Check in on all things Pledge Central. Ideas Network Director Cheryl Gasser is here with me in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Kate.
And you rely on the Ideas Network for informative, in-depth discussions. We rely on you to keep programs like this one going strong.
And it's listener support that is the single largest source of funding for programs here on WPR, and that is why your gift of any amount right now makes such an important difference. So make an impact at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Our goal this hour is 10 trusty pledges. We trust that they'll be here this hour. We'll meet this goal one pledge at a time. Let's start it with yours at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this goal is so important. It's set to make sure that we have the funding we need for the programs you rely on, programs like The Morning Show. Take a minute and think about this week alone. Kate has talked about the future of retail, the pioneering role of women in the development of the internet, and efforts surrounding election security in Wisconsin. And that's just to name a few. This is quality programming, and you want to support it. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You enjoy listening to Wisconsin Public Radio in part because we're commercial free, and that means we depend on other sources of funding. State, federal funding, business sponsors, all very important. And there's another source that's really important too.
The single largest piece of funding for WPR programs comes from you. Let me say that again. It comes from you. Your support makes all the difference. It makes Wisconsin Public Radio possible. It's the backbone of how things work here. And when you give, you keep the quality and independent talk and news on the air going strong. So make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You listen to WPR because you can count on unbiased reporting, interesting discussions, great music. It's all there. It's the full package. You probably agree Wisconsin is a better place because we have all this access to high-quality news and entertainment programming.
And that quality is possible thanks to donors, people we call members. You're already a listener now. Take the next step to become a member. Your donation of, say, $120, maybe $10 a month, makes Wisconsin a place where great radio is available to everyone. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
My name's Karen Ann Hoffman. I live in Stevens Point, and I'm an Iroquois-raised bead worker. The rock art caribou on this artist mug was inspired by a piece of rock art in southwestern Wisconsin. I saw scratched into the rock this line with an arrow point, it looked like, on it. And so I found myself standing in the very same place that some artist thousands of years prior had stood. And I thought, you know, I have to honor that artist.
Ask for your 2018 artist mug when you make a gift of $15 a month or more. Here's how.
Go to WPR.org to get your artist mug or 888-202-2552. Make your pledge right this very moment while you're thinking about it. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Ideas Network Director Cheryl Gasser. We are asking for your support during this spring membership drive because it's what makes the WPR programs that you rely on each day possible. Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you end up choosing, that is the right amount.
Now, we know you value your time. We value your time, too. And so giving to WPR, it takes just a couple minutes. You tell us your name, your contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay.
Quick, easy to do, your gift right now. It helps so much. So take the next few minutes to support the station. station that you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we are looking for 10 pledges this hour of the morning show. It's you who make WPR possible when you give. So make your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The Weizmann Center has more than 8,000 patient visits each year. The researchers there are working to advance treatments for a variety of disabilities that have overlapping characteristics. And the Weizmann Center has named a new director, the sixth in its history. Jiang Chong takes that position July 1st. He's currently interim director for the Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities Research Center. He's an associate professor of medical genetics and neurology. He joined the UW-Madison faculty in 2007 after earning a PhD at the University of Pennsylvania. His postdoc training at the Whitehead Institute for Biomedical Research at MIT. Jiang Chong, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, the Weizmann Center started 1973, but it's decades ago. It's come a long way. What is the mission of the center? What is the work that's going on there by dozens of faculty members?
So the mission of the center is to advance the knowledge of human development, developmental disabilities, and neurodegenerative disorders throughout the lifespan. We have, like you said, many faculties are conducting multidisciplinary research at the center using all the tools at our disposal to try to understand the mechanisms underlying disorders we are interested in, and hopefully developing treatment in the future for the affected patients.
One of the tools at your disposal right now, very cutting edge, we'll be talking about later this hour, is stem cell technology. So when you're working on these diseases, you've been part of the center for years investigating this rare genetic disease. You're now taking a new role as a director. Before we get into what Rett syndrome is and your research, what do you want to accomplish as the new director when there's work going on in so many different facets?
So what I really wanted to do is to continue stimulating collaboration and interaction between the different researchers, different people at the center, to integrate our effort in research, service, education, training, and outreach activities so that we can create more value for the community that we are supporting. And there are several initiatives we're going to look into in the near future. But overall, our goal is to help the community and support the community.
When you began as a researcher, and especially in your postdoc, you fell into Rett syndrome research. Can you help us understand, first of all, what Rett syndrome is?
Sure. It's a rare neurodevelopmental disorder caused by mutations or imperfections in a single gene named MECP2. And the disease mostly affects girls, and it's devastating. It basically affects all aspects of the brain function of these girls, including eating, speaking, moving, and even breathing normally. So it is highly debilitating, and I had the fortune to interact with many of the patients and their family, both while I was doing my postdoc and after I established my research program here in Madison. So makes me really want to help them when you see them.
What advancements have been made in Rett syndrome? Because it is such a quandary as to these are babies born completely normal at birth, and then something happens.
Right. So a lot of the things have been learned, and there are even quite a few clinical trials going on in the United States as well as in Europe. So basically what we learned is where this gene is turned on inside the brain and what type of cells and what kind of function it carries out, and therefore when you lose it, what kind of problems could it cause. And from these knowledges, people are able to develop a few therapeutic strategies to attack these targets, and then hopefully reverting the symptoms of the disease. One key knowledge we gained is that the cells don't die. They're still there. They're missing an important part of its function. If you put it back, then the brain is perfectly capable of carrying out its normal function. So that's very important so that we know it can be reversed.
So it's like turning a light switch back on.
That's correct. Yeah, yeah. So there's some important discovery in that aspect, and the patient community felt really excited because that tells you it can be reversed.
What are some of the therapeutic approaches and what's happening in the clinical setting at Weizmann to approach Rett syndrome?
So we have obviously clinical services for Rett syndrome as well as many other developmental disorders. We are not conducting the clinical trials on site. Because this is a rare disease, we don't have that many patients here. Usually these trials are conducted at larger cities where you get more patients, and then it's easier for the people from surrounding regions to travel to get the trial conducted there. But we see the patients, we treat the patients the normal way, the symptoms, maintaining them. Normal function, or if you will, try to bring the patient to as much normal as possible. And we do a lot of research trying to understand the mechanism underlying the disease and then develop new treatment. And one of the main trials going on is growth factors. So growth deficit is one big problem with these girls, and several trials are using growth factors trying to see if it could help the function of patients.
Is Rett syndrome inherited, or is this a random error in a person's genetics?
For the most part, it is a random error in the genetics. If you can see that these patients are severely affected, and they're unlikely to have to marry and have children, so it's very rare to have it as inherited, and most the mutation or to the gene happens in the parents, and then they randomly give it to the kids.
So Rett syndrome is an intellectual and developmental disability. Is it also, though, degenerative because it gets worse over time?
Like I mentioned earlier, it is not degenerative. Okay. There's no cell death that anyone has been able to observe in either the models, animal models or cell models of the disease, or in the patient. That's the great part for the disease, because the parts, important parts, the structure is still there. You put the gene back in, or you target some of these deficits downstream of the gene, and you can improve and reverse the symptoms. The reason it gets worse over time is because this is so important everywhere in the brain, in all kinds of cells. And if you just don't have it, and then you're the missing out of that function is going to become a burden over time. And then the parts or the function that's affected is just going to get worse and worse. It's more difficult for the system to cope with over time.
We are talking about the Weizmann Center research. It was named in honor of the late pediatrician Harry A. Weizmann, who was also a biochemist, a pioneer in developmental disability research. He was a driving force in the enactment of legislation mandating testing for all newborns for the metabolic condition PKU, which leads to intellectual disability. If undetected, we're talking with the incoming director of the Weizmann Center, Qing Cheng, on the morning show. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Has research into therapies helped you or someone you know live a better life with a disability? What makes you optimistic for a cure? Where do you see treatments going as new research reveals more about your disease? You can call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll get back to the conversation in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. The Weizmann Center at UW-Madison provides clinical services for children with developmental disabilities such as autism, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, genetic conditions. It has 11 specialty clinics, 3 autism treatment programs. We're talking with its incoming director, Qing Cheng. We're going to talk about autism research in just a moment. But before we do, let's get an update on the spring membership drive. And we are in the throes of it right now. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Ideas Network Director Cheryl Gasser. Good morning.
Good morning, Kate.
Listeners, that is you, provide the single largest source of funding here on WPR. This drive is your chance to support all the programs you enjoy. So give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can join Karen in Madison, who says, whether I'm home or traveling, I like to start my day with Wisconsin Public Radio. Karen, thank you so much for that support. We are looking this hour for 10 pledges. 10 pledges by 7 o'clock this morning. And if you've already given, like Karen, we want to thank you so much.
And if you haven't, you can give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift funds the programs that you enjoy.
Every day, Kate and the morning team work very hard to bring you a great morning of radio on topics ranging from science and health to politics. And it's a real pleasure to do so because we know that you are curious and intelligent. We also know that you like to have fun and enjoy all that Wisconsin has to offer.
And thank you so much for being a fantastic audience. I mean that from the bottom of my heart, and for being the reason we do what we do here and contributing as you do with these conversations. You give so much. And now just give a little bit here with your financial support. Your support makes these mornings possible. So give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And maybe you're listening to Kate this morning and wondering, you know, what's the best way to make a gift to Wisconsin Public Radio? Well, it's to become a sustaining member, because as a sustainer, you'll make automatic monthly contributions from your bank account or your credit card.
A lot of people give $15 a month on this plan. Some give $100. That amount is up to you. As a sustainer, you're an ongoing member of WPR, providing reliable funding for your favorite radio station. So give now, become a sustainer today, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Public radio has enriched my life in so many ways. When I was a new mother back in the 1990s, and I became hooked on Wisconsin Public Radio. I've been an avid listener, and each day of my life is enriched because of the depth of the topics offered, the balanced dialogue that the hosts and the guests both offer. The Ideas Network makes me a better mother and a better citizen, and I'm so thankful for it.
I love to hear that. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here this morning with Cheryl Gasser. We're raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio and all the programs that you enjoy on the air. So whether your pledge is $10 a month, whether it's $100 a month, we appreciate and we really count on your gift.
And you can join your friends and neighbors who believe in the value of WPR and believe in supporting it. It takes the support of everyone who listens to make WPR as strong as it can be.
When you make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you'll be doing your part to make sure that the news and the information that you need, that you expect, is here every day.
We are looking for 10 pledges in the next half hour or so, so plenty of time to get your pledge in, either on the phone at 888-202-2552 or online. It's quick and easy, WPR.org. Either way, your gift is such an important part of making the programs that you enjoy possible.
The Waisman Center is home to dozens of faculty researchers, more than 600 people on staff at this research hive on the UW-Madison campus. They're working toward breakthroughs on developmental disabilities and neurodegenerative diseases. We're going to be exploring the work on autism now with the center's incoming director, who stays with us, Qing Chung, and you can be part of the conversation, 800-642-1234. Has your family been part of a partnership between research and medicine for autism? Have you seen a person benefit from treatment? What are your questions? Call in. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Qing, one handout for the organization says the Waisman Center is committed to solving the autism puzzle. What do you mean by that? What is the clinical definition of autism?
Well, that's a great question. This is a disease of a clinical diagnosis, and it's based on three key behavior deficits. There's obviously social interaction deficits, and there is the repetitive behavior deficits, and these deficits actually forms the definition of the disease, because the genetic cause of the disease is not entirely clear. Different from Rett syndrome we were just talking about, it's not a single gene. There are many, many genes that's involved in the causes and the outcomes of the disease, which is quite common nowadays.
Are we finding out anything more about what is going on in the brain with autism?
But there are many aspects of it. It's not a single characteristic change, but there are common changes at the cellular level and the network level, and there are some changes that existed in subpopulations of autism. So there's a lot of stratification. Different autism patients may manifest in slightly different ways.
You can't lump everyone together. That's why we hear that word spectrum.
Right. So and with some autism, where the genetic cause is clear in some of those patients, they do have similar manifestations at the structural level and the cellular level.
So when we hear the statistic that about one in every 68 children is affected by autism, how should we think about that? Does that mean it's common?
Yes, it is quite common, and the diagnosis and the numbers of patients diagnosed with autism has been rising in recent years, and that's why it's caught a lot of attention. It's correct to say that there's a lot, but the reason behind it is complex and it's not clear. You can't point at a single factor to say, oh, that's why we are seeing more and more autism patients nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, is the reason because we're able to identify it more easily? We're diagnosing it better than we did in the past? Is that, could that be factoring into why we're seeing a rise?
That is one of the main factors, but it's not the only factor. As we mentioned earlier, this is a clinical diagnosis. You can't just go in there and get the DNA of the person and say, well, you have this change in your DNA, therefore you have this disease. And it's a clinical diagnosis. People have to look at the behavior of the affected individual. Clinicians have to look at that and make a call to say, oh, you have it or you don't have it. And it's complex behavior. And there are guidelines you follow for the diagnosis, but it's mostly human interaction. You look at it and then you see whether it crosses a line to get the diagnosis or not.
So I'm hearing a lot of observation in there, patient to patient. What type of research are you doing at Waisman Center because there is such a focus on autism?
So we're doing many different things. As I mentioned earlier in the conversation, we do research, we provide service, we do outreach activity, we do training and education. The hope is through all of these activities, we could help the autism community more. And in the research front, we have studies that's looking at the behavior of the patients. For example, a longitudinal study from Marsha Malik and Jan Greenberg's lab over 15 years, they looked at autism families and their patients' behavior. And from that study, they were able to pinpoint risk factors and develop behavior, evidence-based behavior intervention that is now being offered in the autism treatment center at our center. Hmm. So this is an example of from research to clinical service in the form of treatment. And we do outreach activities to inform and educate the community. We have an event called Day with the Expert. That's a quarterly event throughout the year, and one of the four events every year is with autism. We invite autism researchers and community members to come together to learn the latest advance. And then one unique feature of that is we have a community panel where the attendees could see one of their own, how they cope with the life of autism. So you could learn a lot from these outreach activities. We have many other outreach activities.
You also have the Transitioning Together program focused on high school students.
Right. That was the behavior intervention I was alluding to earlier. This is a behavior intervention program offered in the Autism Treatment Center that came from a long-term study. And this is basically you have the affected individual and their family come together to the center to learn what kind of behavior you could help and to enforce so that the affected individual would have a better chance of success in their daily life at school.
How does autism then start overlapping and interconnecting with degenerative diseases such as the work you're doing on ALS and Parkinson's?
That's also a very interesting question. From the research side, like I mentioned, these are all diseases of the brain. And whether the difference between the developmental disorders and the degenerative disorders is that in developmental disorders such as Rett syndrome, autism, cells don't die. They're still there. In degenerative disorders such as ALS, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, certain cells in the brain die, and that's the problem. And that's the difference. Was the commonality between the two is that the two type of diseases at the cellular level often share common mechanisms. The parts where the cells connect, they interact with each other, what we call synapses in the brain, that's where commonalities would appear. And by understanding one disease in the common pathway, the common structure and common deficits, we can inform the understanding of the other diseases in the other category. So that's why we have the two together, and we hope to we also recognize this is a lifelong event for both.
Yeah, we are talking here in the morning show with the Weissman Center's incoming director, Qing Sheng, and the Weissman Center opened in 1973. Today, it's working how to incorporate so much research, looking at stem cell research into all facets of work on neurodegenerative diseases. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Coming up, we're going to explore how stem cell research at UW-Madison is a game changer. But first, let's check out the positive momentum on our spring membership drive here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Cheryl Gasser in the studio with me. We're encouraging you to make your gift in support of the programs that you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Good morning, Kate. We are looking for 10 pledges in the next 20 minutes or so. If you've been listening for a long time, or maybe even just discovered the morning show, we would love to hear from you, because it is your gift right now that's so important, because when you give, you support the programs that you rely on every day.
And thank you so much if you've already given. And if you haven't, the time is now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've been discussing the diagnosis and treatment of autism. Conversations like this help make the connection between medical research in the lab and new treatments and approaches to those affected. It's conversations like this that are made possible by listeners like you. WPR is listener supported, and that means when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you make this conversation possible. So please choose an amount that works for you and take a few minutes to make your pledge.
We have a beautiful new artist mug this year. It's an image of a caribou created in beadwork. It's made by Karen Ann Hoffman of the Oneida Nation. We think you'll love drinking your coffee and tea from this mug every morning as you listen to the morning show. Ask for yours when you give $15 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio wakes me up every morning. Mostly I just enjoy the morning programming and the afternoon programming. I became a sustaining member because I felt so guilty with all the pledge drives, because they're so logical and they're so persistent. It's crucial that we have people support it so we don't lose it. I'm Sarah from Wausau. Join me as a sustainer of Wisconsin Public Radio.
And you can pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Cheryl Gasser. It's listener support that's the single biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on. And that is why your support during this spring membership drive is so very important. Maybe your gift is $10 a month or $100 a month. Whatever amount that you end up choosing, that is the right amount.
And we really want to hear from you this hour. We make our overall pledge goal by these hourly goals. And this hour, our goal is to get 10 pledges by 7 o'clock. We would love to hear from you, because you wake up with the morning show, because Kate is part of your morning, because it wouldn't be the same without it. Make WPR possible with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The headlines tell us we are on the brink of a stem cell revolution. It has now been decades since stem cell technology emerged as the next great breakthrough in modern medicine, with the bold potential for one day curing everything from heart disease to cancer. It is, though, a work in progress. It takes time. The Waisman Center at UW-Madison is seeing the promise of stem cell as researchers there work on advancing treatments for autism, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, degenerative diseases like ALS. We're talking with the center's incoming director this hour, Chiang Chung, on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You can join in the conversation. What questions do you have about the potential for using stem cells? What do you wonder about the Waisman Center? Has research into therapies helped you or someone you know live a better life with a disability? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So how is the Waisman Center incorporating stem cell technology, stem cell research into the work you're doing?
That's a great question. We have strong stem cell expertise on this campus, and the center has established a infrastructure for stem cell research that covers all of these areas. And we're developing tools to use the stem cells to model various brain disorders. And that's really what's changed the game. Many of these diseases I was mentioning earlier, you don't know the genetic cause and you can't really easily create an animal model. And that's where some of these stem cell breakthroughs, like the induced pluripotent stem cell technology, will allow you to get the skin cells or somatic cells from the patient and then create a stem cell model for that particular disease. So that has been a breakthrough.
And when you can build a model for yourself, you're then able to manipulate and do further studies on that model. You have a lot more latitude.
That's correct. And like you just mentioned, you can manipulate those cells. Not only can we create those cells, we can use novel genetic tools to further manipulate those cells to make the model more reflective of the disease condition or make the study more rigorous. So basically a combination of creating these stem cells and using genetic manipulation in those cells to target some of these downstream deficits that you learn from the model, and that would allow you to really look at whether any of these deficits could be addressed or targeted for therapies.
Are stem cells living up to the, I don't want to use the word hype, but there was so much momentum, especially in the 1990s, behind stem cell research. Of course, there was controversy around it as well, but has it lived up? Is it getting us somewhere in trying to find treatments and advancements through these diseases that you look at?
And again, that's a great question. In my mind, maybe I'm a little biased because I'm using the two, I think it definitely has. And there has been approved clinical trials, and recently there has been trials showing promise using stem cells to treat degenerative diseases. And in the lab, we have seen a lot of that promise pan out in the models we have been studying. So in my view, it definitely has. Of course, with any new technology, when you first have it, you potentially would have caveats, it's imperfect, but over time, it gets better and better. So the tools themselves actually get better. So yes, I really believe that the next success using stem cells to help patients is just right around the corner.
Let's bring in Robert now with a question. Robert is in Lake Geneva. Good morning.
Morning. I had a question. This is kind of far out there, but let's suppose that stem cell research does become a thing. Who's it going to be available to? You know, is it only be available to those who have a lot of money? Will it be available to everybody? You know, what does that part kind of look like?
Oh, thank you, Rob, for that wonderful question. I think it will be available for everyone. Like many technologies, initially it could appear to be expensive, but over time, when you get up to scale, when we optimize the tools we have and the strategies we use, the cost will come down. And I do believe this is going to benefit everyone.
So as it becomes more universally available, that drives down cost?
That's what I'm alluding to. Yeah, I think so.
What do you think the role is in scientific advancement, especially in stem cells? Because when you look at the history of Waisman in the early 1970s, with a pediatrician and who was also very much involved in the biology behind it, so can you see us advancing as we work between physicians and also the doctoral community, and trying to merge those two into making these advancements?
That is a great perspective. Really, the integration is what I've been talking about between research, clinical service, training, and outreach. And that's actually what Harry Waisman envisioned with his own work. He is a clinician himself, and he's a researcher himself, and he's also driving to support the individual's education, the affected individual's education and integration into the society. And we are who we are from the history, and we're continuing his mission and continuing the strategy. And I do believe the interaction will make it better. From my personal perspective, the minute I saw the patients and their families, it put a face on what we are doing at the bench. It's not just intellectual curiosity anymore, understanding question. It's we want to help these people, and that's the goal of the center.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it seems like the lab is a world away from what these families are having to grapple with these, things like autism day-to-day in their family routines. And how are you able to help these families, care for these families, and know that, try to express that they're not alone and there is some development, some cures on the way?
And that's why interaction between the community, the patient community, and the researchers is also important. That's why we have all these great outreach activities. When we get together, like I said, for researchers, we see the patients, we see the impact and the significance of our work, and we become more committed and driven. From the patient's perspective and family's perspective, when they see us, they see promise. They see what we're doing, and they see that potentially that will help them down the line. So that's my experience interacting with the resting room patient community.
Yeah, and bringing it back to Rhett as well, I guess there's a very simple way to ask you this. Chiang Chung, what is your greatest challenge? What do you grapple with at Waisman?
I think this is a great place for me to do the research. I'm not really sure beyond the normal challenges in the lab and getting things to go the way you want them to go, right? So we try a lot of things in the lab, and we take risk in our research, hoping that we would learn something new. And sometimes these hypotheses we base our study on are not correct. You find out at the end of the day, okay, this way it doesn't work. You find a different way. So that's the normal life. I don't really view that as challenges. But I think what I see at work is mostly positive things in being in this environment, multidisciplinary environment, that actually support and expand my research program. So I see it's a great place to be. But funding is certainly a big challenge for any biological researchers. We rely on federal funding. And if there's change at the federal level in terms of National Institute of health budget and allocation, then researchers could suffer because they don't have the necessary resource to conduct these important studies.
And Weizmann, I would assume, is heavily reliant on grants?
That's correct. I think that's the single most important source of support we receive. We have been successful over the years, but this is always on everybody's mind the last few years, the last decade or so. We are getting cuts from state budget, and the funding line at the federal agency has not been very high. But we view that as just the nature of our life, and we try our best and we cope with it.
Well, Chiang, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was the new director for the Weizmann Center, Chiang Chung, and he takes that position on July 1st. Right now, he's interim director for the Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities Research Center. He's an associate professor of medical genetics and neurology, having joined the UW-Madison faculty in 2007 after earning a PhD at the University of Pennsylvania and doing his postdoc training at MIT. Now let's turn over to our spring membership drive as I glance up at that leaderboard to see how we're doing. It sounds like the birds are chirping this morning. We need those pledges flowing in. Cheryl Gasser, what can we do here to liven it up?
Well, Kate, I think this was an incredibly wonderful discussion, and I think we need to give that number and the website so you can make your pledge at 888-202-2552 or pledge online at WPR. We heard earlier in the drive from Susan in Menominee Falls, and I love this comment, Kate. I can't function without WPR. It keeps me up to date and informed on everything. Thanks for all your good work. Well, Susan, thank you for your pledge. Now, won't you join her?
We have such interesting topics every day, such lively conversations here on the Ideas Network. It is such a pleasure to be part of that. And you are integral to that equation. It really is a community discussion we have each and every day on the Ideas Network. Now help make that possible. WPR is listener supported. That means when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you make this hour, you make many, many more hours possible. Choose an amount that works for you. Take a few minutes, make your pledge.
And that really is all it takes, just a couple minutes. And you can also enjoy our brand new 2018 Artist Mug. It's a beautiful image of a caribou made by Karen Ann Hoffman. The work is inspired by rock art that she found in southwestern Wisconsin. You can see the mug online when you pledge at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And that Artist Mug can be yours for a pledge of $15 a month or more.
At Wisconsin Public Radio, we ask you to decide how much to give. And no matter what you choose, you get 24 hours a day of news, talk, music, and entertainment in return. That's a great deal. Where do you wish you could get that kind of deal?
Just about anywhere. My education, a vacation, or anything really I could think about spending I wish I could choose to pay.
Oh, beer?
A great Italian meal.
During this pledge drive, we ask you to contribute as generously as you can. And, unlike with other things, you'll always be the one to decide how much to give.
Yes, indeed. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Cheryl Gasser, and we are asking for your support during the spring membership drive because it's what makes the WPR programs that you rely on possible. Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, is the right amount.
And Wisconsin Public Radio, here we work on the honor system. You don't have to pay for it. You can still listen, go online. But when you do choose to support WPR, you make all of the great programming that you enjoy possible, including the morning show. So how about a pledge right now of $10 a month?
You decide the amount and then go to WPR.org or 888 202-252.
You make a difference when you pledge. You count on WPR to keep you informed, and we'd love to hear from you now in the final minutes of this hour. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Support the programs you care about and the programs that you enjoy with your favorite hot beverage in the mix, the 2018 WPR Artist Mug. And that is when you give $15 a month or more. This year's artwork is an image of a caribou made with traditional Native American beadwork. So ask for your very lovely creative new mug at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you've already given, thanks so much. But if not, we would love to hear from you. Your pledge is important and it makes a difference. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks for your support of WPR.